In a world where action films are dumped in theaters and TV, dead on arrival.
I can't go on living this lie!
You need a hero.
Last time I trusted someone, I lost an eye.
You need a helper.
Hello, nothing to see here.
You need a healer.
That is affirmative.
You need...
We're on the air.
Professor Rick's Action Film Autopsy.
All right, hey everybody. It's... We're back in our special recording device, recording studio, I should say. This time it's not Miko's. Was it your car last time, Miko?
It was my car.
You're now your lost and belated car.
Yes.
You know, since we've talked to you last, Miko and Jen were in a car accident, but they're fine. But his car is not.
Yep.
Well, I have to ask you about that later. Anyway, so we're back in the studio, and here we are. Introduce yourself, guys. All longtime listeners to the podcast should know who's about to talk, but introduce yourselves anyway.
Hi, I'm Jen. I run the animation website, animationcomplex.com, along with Miko.
Yes, I'm Miko. I am helping with the Animation Complex and working at an animation studio.
That's right. You guys are so famous now, you don't even need last names.
We don't even need to name drop the studio.
That's right. Yes. And here we are. We are in January. And you know what January is? January is the month where movies go to die. For years and years and years. It's changing slightly now. They're getting close. It used to be the big movies would come out in the summer and at holiday time.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Or for all you people who think that, you know, we should say the full name at Christmas time. Let me see if my recorder is still... Oh, anyway, you're recording. But now everything is encroaching on now, you know, big movies are coming out in March, and they came up in April, and now they're probably getting closer and closer to January, but not yet. But anyway, so January is where people go to die. And so let us start with actually a December movie. You guys saw something I didn't get to see. I'm in a production of My Fair Lady at the Center Stage in Shelton. So I'm at rehearsals. So when you guys invited me to see Assassin's Creed, I wasn't able to go. However...
And boy, did you dodge a bullet.
More than a bullet. It's more like a Gatling gun.
Well, we have not talked about it because I wanted you to save it for the podcast.
Oh, God.
Right.
Now, let me just tell you, Assassin's Creed was directed by Justin Kurzel, who's an Australian, who did a movie called Macbeth, based on the Shakespeare.
Oh, was that also with Fassbender?
Also with Fassbender.
Oh, Marianne Cotillard.
That's right. And so...
Repeat offender.
Yeah, well, so he apparently was a big fan of the video game. By the way, do you play the video game, Miko?
I did play the video game. I played the first and the second one.
I only played the first one.
Of Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, yes. It was really good. That's why I was really excited.
The game was really, really good.
I thought this would be...
It was one of a kind
be the movie to break the video game movie curse.
No, that curse is
and
deep.
And it set it back like 50 years.
All right. So I've heard... Everybody hated it. I don't know what it has on Rotten Tomatoes. Probably something like 16 or something.
Yeah, I don't even think, because it's like, you
12,
know, a lot of these
10?
Movies, you have like, you know, the fans. There's always a disparity between the fans and the critics. But I'm pretty sure even the biggest fan can just... I don't know if you can find anything.
No.
Like, we found two nice things to say about
this
movie.
We're going to say that first.
Okay.
And then we'll go and... destroy it.
Yeah, we'll say that, and then you can tell us about what you know. I don't know if there's a stunt coordinator and stuff, but the one thing that we both liked about it was we really appreciated in the flashback scenes, they're transported, they're in Spain, and I appreciated that even, like, Michael Fassbender, like, everybody spoke actual Spanish, and there were subtitles.
Yes.
It wasn't just, like, they spoke a little Spanish, and then it turned into English, or they just, like, ignored language.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I appreciated that. The other thing that I liked was, like, the costumes were cool because they were cool.
Well, and that and Michael Fassbender's body, basically.
Oh yeah, Miko liked Michael Fassbender with his shirt off.
The only redeemable thing towards the end of the film was that he, out of no reason, just takes off his
shirt off in one of the scenes.
And just went in and went up to the machine.
Yeah.
So the backstory of this whole film is basically they started in Spain with a flashback. The movie started with the assassins trying to protect the apple.
Before you go on, we don't really have to do the plot.
Okay.
We can, but let's first, of course, we have to do our song.
Okay.
Which is, of course, sung to the tune of I'm a Dumb Guy.
Oh, God.
Written by me, which is, there'll be spoilers, there'll be spoilers, there'll be spoilers, there'll be spoilers, there'll be spoilers. We want these films to be better, so there will be spoilers.
Yeah.
Okay, yes. Song out of the way. Now, you don't have to tell the plot. People can find out
the
plot.
Well, I think what he might have been saying was, because I was still, they screened this at our job, and I was like 15 minutes late to the screening.
Perfect.
And I missed literally nothing important. I think that's what he
that was
getting
was
at in
a
long-winded way.
They started with a flashback, but throughout the film,
they was nothing but exposition.
Exposition, yes, about the flashback.
It was constantly
that was
just driving
shown.
Home. Like, it was basically just like, okay, everybody, now this is a plot point. And then throughout it, they were like, and look at this plot point. And I was like, oh my God.
And were those plot points comprehensible?
You understood it the first time they said, I mean, it was basically like, here's the powerful object everybody wants. And you're like, got it, good, that's all I need to know.
Go on, and they don't.
And they just fucking kept trying.
They kept trying.
Now, how does it compare, I mean, in terms of the plot of the movie versus the plot of the video game? Are they similar, or do they go off on their own?
No, they go off on their own. Mm-hmm. They have their own story.
They took the concept, and they kind of
they pretty much took
it.
The concept only. They didn't really follow any of the games that I know of.
They had some, like, I only played the first one, but they had some cameos from, like, characters from other ones briefly.
Uh-huh.
But, like, that's as far as it was.
All right, so now here's the big question. Why was it so bad?
Everywhere.
I mean, how about of course, we're called the Action Film Autopsy.
Yeah.
So, from an action standpoint, was the action comprehensible?
Oh,
was it,
man.
Did
no.
it stay in character? Did anybody do anything that was interesting?
For me, one of the annoying things about this movie was the camera had no point of view, like, the entire film. And it kind of just, like, the camera would kind of just wander around. And, like, I don't know, I felt like it was really disconnected. And for me, like, being more aware of this kind of thing because of meeting you, like, for me, the fights felt so, like, it felt like the person didn't know how to edit fight scenes.
Oh, was it, was the editing, like, with a shredder? You couldn't tell what was going on?
It wasn't even that. Like, it was kind of like, so a lot of this, there's a lot of parkour, like, style moves and stuff in this, too, and, like, that action. And for that, it felt like they just didn't know how to shoot that kind of thing.
I was very sad when I saw the parkour scene where
none of it flowed.
Previously, Assassin's Creed game has done a commercial where they have hired parkour artists, I guess that's what you call them, in France to do parkour throughout the city, and it was filmed beautifully.
Yeah.
And this film could not have done that. It couldn't do it. It tried, but failed. It tried, but failed miserably. It was disorienting.
Like, I feel like they could have hired
GoPro
people.
It wasn't flow well.
It
just wasn't flow well.
Mm-hmm.
It was everywhere. The bad guy were chasing them throughout the city, but they will pop out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it wasn't coherent.
The fights were very dramatic. Like the movie we just saw, like.
We'll get to that.
I know, but I'm saying, like, that movie, it was everything was over the top, and that was kind of the point, and that was the fun of it. But in this, for me, it's like, it's with assassins, you kind of, you know, obviously they're, like, kind of like ninjas in that, like, they're very, like, low-key, nitty-gritty, like, they kind of just, like, do the dirty work, get their hands dirty, call it a day.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, like, everything felt like this dramatic flourish.
Everything.
And I
there
was
wasn't
kind of
any
just,
assassination
like,
going
yeah,
on.
Yeah, like, none.
At all.
Yeah, everything was, like, right out in the open, and, like, there was, like, the one big scene. One of the big scenes earlier in the film, it's like they're being burnt at the stake and then they escape from it. So they're like in the middle of the town square and then they have this huge fight and then they parkour through the city. And then the other one, it's like a melee with all of the people like at the facility and they're like kind of rebelling and they're going on a rampage. And like it's all just like the only assassination is like the very like last sequence.
It's funny because
it wasn't even stealth.
Yeah.
It was literally just using their wrist knife,
the gauntlet,
I guess.
The gauntlets to kill it.
You know, I'm pretending I saw it, and I'm going to now respond the way I think I would have had I seen it, which was, it's right in the title. How difficult is it?
Yeah.
Assassin's Creed.
So, since
it's, there was a giant horse and carriage chase scene that again I was just like, what is, and the way it ended, it was just like,
since
why
this is based
this
on
this?
Assassin's Creed,
yeah.
So in the beginning of the film where they first went into his memory when they were the bad guys were trying to find the location of this object, and they were asking this, they were grabbing a prince from the people, and they were standing in the middle. There is a very good reference that they could have got from the Assassin's Creed games, where assassins were trying to rescue someone from getting beheaded, and they would walk through the crowd slowly, and they eventually, once they get to the podium, they jump up and they rescue the guys, they use their knives. It was very stealthy, very quick, and in and out.
Yeah.
This one, it's more like, I'm gonna stand on the rooftop and jump down to get to you so you can see me coming, but I'm still gonna kill you.
And it's like, to an extent, I get it, because it's like, in the game, you know, they want to make the gameplay as long as possible, because yeah. they want you to keep playing, and they want you to, and you want, so you have to be stealthy, you have to like stay under like a noise parameter, and in this I get it, they have like 2 hours to like try to knock one out of the park, and like,
but all right, three words that describe the movie.
Gray or like brown.
I heard it was very brown.
The whole movie was brown. Like if you look at that color script laid out, like it was just, it's literally like a puddle of mud.
Oh.
And just like the movie.
And I would say brown, unfocused, and
was it boring?
Yeah.
Yes.
Because everybody's saying it's so bad, and I'm kind of...
It wasn't even enjoyable bad. It was just bad. Like, the dialogue was so, like, I know, again, I'm trying really hard to not get into everything on this podcast, but I'm failing.
I don't mind.
But it's like the dialogue was so corny and cheesy and predictable.
Oh, yeah, I hate that.
And, like...
From the start, the reason why I know that, from the start, before you, because you were 15 minutes late, before you came in, it was the start of the Assassin's Creed. He was getting initiated, and all of them all said, basically, we protect this. We live for the Creed. We are assassins. They literally said it out loud.
Spelled it out.
Yeah.
Spelled it out for you as though we don't know what we're looking at, our assassins.
Mm-hmm.
It was bad. It was really bad. The fight towards the end as well was really bad, because sometimes it will break the golden rule in filmmaking, which is the 180 rule.
Oh, yeah. It broke it a couple times.
It broke a couple times, the 180 rule, where you shouldn't ever break doing anything.
Yeah.
Unless there's special occasions, but they would do random camera, Michael Bay style camera spins around the character, and they will have people fight from left to right, and then it will switch without the camera rotating. It was a cut, yeah. But people would become right to left. It was just disorienting. So the fight wasn't even good.
Yeah.
And after the climactic fight, you thought the whole thing was over. It wasn't. It went into a low, and then it picks up just a little bit to show a little bit of another small assassination, and then it went down.
Yeah, and I feel that, like, we've only been nitpicking the actual filmmaking, but like the main character, his story arc was so shitty. Like his motivation was so weak. Like he was basically like kidnapped and like forced to do this company's bidding, but given the illusion that it was his choice.
Yeah.
And then they kind of basically, they like over superpowered him so that they could all rebel.
Yeah.
Like they didn't see that coming. And it was just like the scenes between him, like kind of being, the reluctant hero versus like kind of answering the call. It's kind of like, it was literally like two scenes in between. Like was kind of just like he was in his room and he was like brooding, and then he was just like, okay, I'll help you. And I was like, what the fuck are you doing?
I was just extremely disappointed at the fact that the action wasn't even good.
I was optimistic because I thought like, oh, I understand he did like the X-Men movies, but still, when like Fassbender joined on, I was like, oh, like, okay.
There's a chance, yes, because he usually has tape.
Yeah, he usually picks like, he does like really weird, good, like,
video games
movies.
Defeat everybody. I mean, the guy, Duncan Jones, the son of David Bowie, who did Warcraft, loves Warcraft, and apparently this director loves Assassin's Creed.
Yeah.
But then again, Peter Jackson apparently loves King Kong.
Yeah.
He made that terribleness. It's, you know, when I went
it's
to
like
work...
Peabody, like Peabody.
Yes, Miss Peabody and Sherman.
Yeah.
When I went to work for CBS back in the 80s, working on the Twilight Zone, I was brought out by the vice president in charge of promotions, and he said, I'm going to tell you something now that you can take with you your entire career. Shit runs downhill.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting in that whenever you go to a movie and there's not a single line of dialogue that is interesting, mm-hmm. imaginative, inventive, clever, witty, whatever, or really, really well done, you can pretty much guess the whole movie's going to be like that, from mm-hmm. the editing to the filming to the action scenes. And I've seen it again and again. The most recent one is in Into the Badlands, where, again, there's not a single line of dialogue that is engaging in any way. And it's all cliches, and it's all posturing. I don't know if I've mentioned this on this show already, the concept that I created when I saw The Crow, the original movie of The Crow. I dubbed that a City of Assholes movie, where nobody's acting real. They're all posturing.
Mm-hmm.
They're all pretending to be tough. They're all pretending to be badass. And you can tell, because they all kind of talk like this.
Mm-hmm.
So, what are you going to do?
Yeah, geez.
And it makes me tired, as you know. And when we go see movies together and you mm-hmm. hear me sigh or smack my forehead or whatever, or my chin lowers to my chest. So I'm very glad I missed this movie. But mm-hmm. for the record, Ben Cook was the stunt coordinator whose greatest claim to fame prior to being the stunt coordinator on Assassin's Creed was being Daniel Craig's double in most of his Bond movies, which says something about the parkour, especially because that's just an awesome scene in Casino Royale, the parkour scene.
Mm-hmm.
Then also Tomas Eraminas was the fight coordinator who worked on Guardians of the Galaxy, and Mike Lambert was the assistant stunt coordinator who worked on Legend of Tarzan and Man from U.N.C.L.E. And if you're a listener to this podcast, you know I had an issue with the Legend of Tarzan choreography because it really didn't make a lot of sense, although it was kind of fun. So in any case, the next piece is a movie that I saw that you didn't see, and that is One Piece Gold.
Mm.
Now, I was at rehearsal, and I was let out early, and they only showed One Piece Gold in the movie theaters for 3 days.
Yeah, it was like a Funimation,
right.
one of those.
I was a half an hour away, so I neglected to call you. To say, well, I'm going over, and it starts in a half hour. Can you make it?
We would not have been able to make it.
And it was magnificent, really. The more I think about it, the better it gets, which is a good sign.
That's awesome.
I can think about a movie I can tolerate, and then the more I think about it, it gets worse in my mind, and I go, okay, yeah, it did suck.
Mm-hmm.
But the more I think about One Piece Gold, the better it got. I did a little research, and One Piece is apparently, according to, I think, Wikipedia,
mm-hmm.
the most successful anime manga in Japanese history and the world.
It's massive. And it's so funny
it started
here in America when I was really young, and it aired for a little while on Channel 5,
mm-hmm.
like Fox 5, their like kids block. And it was absolutely god-awful. It was terrible. Everybody hated it. And then I remember finding out that it was the most popular show in Japan. And I was like, how is this piece of shit the most popular thing in Japan? And then I finally started, like, watching the subtitled version. Like, I started downloading it.
That's what people were always do.
Yeah, so that was, because that was before I started watching subtitles. I just would watch what was on TV.
Mm-hmm.
And it, like, I understood why. And, like, yeah, and they revived the dub, and I hear that the dub's not too bad, because now Funimation's got it, and they don't, like, change as much about it to try to hide that it's Japanese, and they treat it a little bit more serious. Like, it airs on it airs on Toonami now, which is the later block, so they don't have to, like, edit it down for, like, little kids.
Right, they realize that people can accept it. I still get disappointed, and I'm hoping Funimation puts out the DVD with the original language.
Yeah.
Because the movie still is dubbed.
Mm-hmm.
And even though, thankfully...
Oh, yeah, they'll release it subtitled.
The song at the end of the movie is in original Japanese.
Yeah.
And who do they think is going to go see the movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, I won't read subtitles. I don't want it in Japanese. Most of the audience for those three shows are going to want the Japanese.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And matter of fact, we went to the last show, a friend of mine and I, another anime fan, went to the last showing of the three shows, and the crowd was filled with fans.
Mm-hmm.
And they all reacted to special stars from different movies and different episodes.
Mm-hmm.
For anybody who doesn't know, One Piece is about a kid who wants to be king of the pirates.
Mm-hmm.
It takes place in the way the Japanese always seems to do it, in a alternate reality, an alternate Earth, mm-hmm. a world of pirates and others, and they have a whole hierarchy. If you go to the Wikipedia page, and of course I'll link to it on in the supplementals for this episode, it goes on forever.
The hierarchy of power is deep in this manga.
Because it's been going on for so long.
It's so long. It's
in the hundreds of episodes.
Now. Yeah,
and every episode they were able to create a small story to sort of hook you in with their emotional sort of connection between each characters and between his crew, between the new whoever they're interacting with.
Yeah.
And you want to watch more.
Mm-hmm. And it's about adventure, it's about comedy, it's about greed, it's about lust. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of really good looking anime girls, mm-hmm. really wild.
I say he
anime
can only
characters.
Draw like two body types of women.
Yes. Oh yes.
And they have a completely different program for their breasts.
Mm-hmm.
And their butts. The butt program was very clear in the movie version.
Oh dear.
But also to let people know that it's a superhero story as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because One Piece, I don't know if he was always this way, but he's become Mr. Fantastic from the Fantastic Four.
Yeah, he was.
Yes,
yeah.
He's Plastic Man.
Like
yeah, yes. He stretches.
He was like that, like episode whatever, one
episode
or two,
one.
He gets his power.
And all his crew have different talents and skills. And again, the Japanese do not let that fall by the wayside. You know, whenever I say they introduce a specific person, they should fight in character, and if they have a specific weapon, they should use that specific weapon.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, they didn't go as far as I wanted them to. The Japanese, if you watch the Dragon Ball movies and the Dragon Ball TV shows, except for one character who is the aide to the World Destroyer, he does kung fu. Everybody else does martial arts, but they're really into their martial arts and training their martial arts. So all their movies are about people punching and punching harder.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, they win because they get madder, they yell louder,
mm-hmm.
and they punch harder. But this movie was so well balanced. You know, I don't know how long Assassin's Creed was. How long, you know, the movie ran. Was it a two-hour movie?
It was an hour and 25 minutes.
It's an hour and 25 minutes, but
God, it felt like fucking forever.
That's the point. It felt like fucking forever. One Piece Gold is a full 2 hours long.
Wow. I'm surprised they let them do that.
Full 2 hours long.
Because this is like the 10th or like the 10th movie or something. They've done so many, probably more than that.
And it felt like an hour and 25 minutes. It went by like a rocket.
Yeah.
Wow.
I was going, because when I saw what the length was, I said, oh, I'm going to get bored. Oh, I did not get bored.
Wow.
I mean, there was something visual to see. There was something, and again, I always wish it was in its original language. It's so much more evocative because the voice actors in Japan
mm-hmm.
take their jobs really seriously.
Yes.
I mean, they just don't do voices. And I know they're trying harder to do that at Funimation and other places, but you can't really compare the nuance of the Japanese language. Sometimes it communicates to you even if you don't know Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
You feel the emotion. And, of course, then you're limited by the skill of the subtitler. Because
mm-hmm.
subtitles have to go pretty fast. Because if you'll remember, I don't know if you guys ever saw Speed Racer, the original cartoon show. But in order to get to get the idea across in the American dub, they had to talk really fast.
Mm.
And that was part of the joke. People always remember that people would go at the end of the line because they had to get all this information out. But at least they tried to get the information out. So in any case, One Piece Gold was, it's not so much the fights were great. It's just that because it's animated and because they're balancing some really subtle 3D animation with really complex 2D animation, the choreography was truly in the way it was filmed, in the way it was animated, in the way it was edited. That was the thing that thrilled me. The fights themselves, again, shouting louder, punching harder, but I was there emotionally every second. And I would love to see it again with you guys. As a matter of fact, if they have the DVD out, we'll see it again. We'll see it in Japanese, and maybe we'll talk about it for the DVD. And you guys, being the animation specialists, will be able to tell me how they did that.
Mm.
How did they get me involved? But just, again, for credits, I'll link you to the One Piece page. It's Hiroaki Miyamoto is the director, and Tsutomu Kuroiwa was the writer, and they did an awesome job. Now, back to a movie we did see all together. The last two movies on this podcast we saw together. And the first one was Monster Trucks. Now, you guys have an affiliation with Monster Trucks.
One of the founders of our studio, Blue Sky Studios, Chris Wedge, this was his live-action feature film debut.
Well, I'm not sure what to say. I mean, we want to be positive.
I really feel like this is one of the films. Same thing with Assassin's Creed.
Yeah.
It's super high budget. I feel like it would have been done better in pure animation.
Not only would it have been done better.
Live action.
Yeah.
I think it would have been better received, too.
Yes,
I think it would have been better if it was cheaper. The fact that they put so much budget into it.
That's true.
It's a dumb movie. It's kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
It gets fun at the end.
It gets really fun at the end.
But as it gets fun, even though, and we had a how old was the child at our screen?
I am not sure. I was sitting right next to.
Oh, who was next to us?
Yeah.
Oh, I can't tell.
Girl who's
she
probably
was little,
5 and 6.
But she loved it. And it makes sense because I heard that this story was conceived by like a writer and his like 4-year-old son.
No, it was
or something
conceived
like that.
By the Paramount president, one of the Paramount president's 5-year-old son.
Yeah. It was like he like was like, oh, you should do a movie about this, and it's like a part of me watching this. I was just like, yes, I could see this being one. This is like one of those weird like cult 80s movies that like a 4-year-old remembers fondly, and then maybe when they're older, they rewatch and they're like, oh, I didn't remember that being like I remember that being better as a kid.
Yeah, much
kind of thing.
It's an interesting movie in that it's an interesting and fun and kind of silly idea. It starts pretty interestingly, even though almost immediately you know that, oh, I'm going to have to leave my brain by the door because they have these two actors playing 16-year-olds.
Oh, yeah, who are, like, fully grown.
Who are, yeah, really fully grown. And here's this unbelievably, well, not unbelievable, I don't like using that term, but believably but extremely handsome young man playing the lead, and he's the outcast.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Hollywood's idea of outcast.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great cast. I mean, we've got Jane Levy, who's just awesome in Suburgatory on television, as well as Evil Dead and Don't Breathe. She loves horror movies. So here she is in this movie having to, I guess, make a living.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then they have was Thomas Lennon and Rob Lowe and a bunch of other fine actors. Danny Glover.
She's in Jane. Terms of acting, she was the best actor.
Jane Levy was in there. She was serious.
She was serious.
She was not going to phone this performance in.
No, which was really good. I think in the beginning of the film, they didn't really know what was the direction of the film.
Yeah.
So it felt a little bit like a scary movie
in
some ways, the way they're trying to do it. And towards the end, when they really kind of home in on the body sort of monster, you know, friend sort of adventure type of film, then it gets fun.
Well, it's interesting because the plot, for those of you who, you know, which I would imagine is most of you, haven't seen this movie, it's an evil oil company who discovers that there's a group of creatures who live in our planet, who live on oil. They drink oil, and they're big kind of ET octopus, squid type creatures who are lovable and sweet
and super intelligent
but not able to communicate with English yet. And they have these magic tentacles that somehow galvanize axles in cars to make them go really fast.
I assumed it was some type of like bioelectric, like pulses or something.
Yeah, that's the impression.
Yeah.
And so this kid who is an outcast, who's working on trying to make a great truck for himself, this alien escapes from this evil oil company by hiding in a truck, so the trucks become, in quotes, monster trucks. And at the end, it's a race to try to get this little family of creatures back to their home before the evil oil company kills them and their entire village under the sea.
I mean, try to poison the water.
Poison them, kill them completely, because they want to get their oil wells without the good part of the government stopping them. But so the problem that I had with the movie is that, yes, it's for kids, and yes, you want to suspend your disbelief, but at the end, they're doing vehicular things that are...
Oh, yeah, you didn't like that.
Effing impossible, and not... And
the fun is the best part.
The best part.
In terms of action.
Fun. Yeah, but the thing is, you guys who were in a car accident...
I was triggered.
Prior to seeing the movie, you know, understand that if anything happens to your car... So, you know, kiss your internal organs goodbye.
Oh, yes. Yeah, man.
And these guys are doing stuff that would crush their skulls, shatter their bones.
Just like, I kept just thinking about the whiplash alone, because the whiplash alone, I was out of work for a week just from whiplash.
Yes.
Yeah,
like,
and yours was not a minor accident, but yours wasn't head-on. Yours
yeah.
was the back of your car.
Yeah.
But it's still shocking. Anything is shocking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But of course, when you see a movie like this, but it is up to the filmmaker... that when they have these moments when you have to suspend your disbelief, it's a good idea to make it as credible as possible. And they
right.
could have done it so easily just by having our hero create a netting in the car. I mean, there's a fun scene where they outfit all these trucks with the monsters.
In one night.
But at the same time, somebody... I would have loved it personally, and maybe I'm asking for too much, with somebody going, I'm creating a netting, because I know we're going to be jumping up and down.
Mm-hmm.
And also the girl is driving it, and his other buddy is driving
the scientist.
Car. The scientist, played by Thomas Lennon, is driving it. And he says, yeah, I've got to protect you guys.
Oh, man.
You know, it makes sense. So let me give you a little background on that. Scott J. Astia was the stunt coordinator, and he was also the stunt coordinator on The Revenant, which is quite a change
really?
Of pace. And Spiro Razotos, who was also the co-stunt coordinator, and he did the upcoming Kong Skull Island and Fast and Furious 8.
Hmm.
Not even the Fate of the Furious, which is the next one, but Fast and Furious 8, which may be the same. We'll find out. You can check the supplementals. Anything else to say about Monster Trucks? It was fun. I'm glad I didn't pay for it.
I think the one thing... Of everything, the one thing that I was like, this is unnecessary, was when the one guy barfed on camera.
Oh.
At the camera.
In 3D.
Yeah.
In 3D.
Like, that was the one thing where I was like, it took me out of it, because, like, I get it's a kid's movie, but I was like, you don't fucking need to see that.
Yeah, but I bet the kid next to us loved it.
I don't even know.
And one compliment I have to give in terms of on this movie is that the character... Creech is actually lovable.
I was gonna say he was cute.
Yeah.
He was actually cute.
Yeah. Yeah.
With his jaw full of teeth, with tentacles everywhere.
I like that he had like a scary
cute.
Form too.
Yes.
Like he got all like tremors on us, and
right.
I was like,
oh yeah,
shit, you have an edge. I like appreciated that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't.
He could chew through metal.
Yeah. Yeah. It was cool.
I'm trying to remember what I said right after it ended. I don't know what the exact term, but I said something like, that was entertainingly terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much what it is. And we've spent too much time on it as it is. Because the action is the action. It was a cartoon kind of action. You're
yeah.
right, it would have been better animated. I'm right, it also would have been better if they had not spent so much money and had some more fun with it. Because
mm-hmm.
again, when you have a movie like that, my attitude is, go shoot the moon. Do whatever you want. Go crazy. You know, you can't expect the audience, you know, oh, we can't do this because the audience won't buy it. Are you kidding me? Look at the plot line of the movie. Just go for it.
Yeah.
Go crazy.
Which bring us to the next film.
Ah, yes.
We are going.
Here we go. This is, we just came out of.
I think we literally just saw this.
We just walked out of the theater of XXX, The Return of Xander Cage?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
This is the new XXX movie, the first one, I think, in 10 years, because they mentioned...
They made it seem like 2005
was
the second one. Right.
This is the third one.
I say, Miko, you've seen all three, right?
I've seen all three.
Okay.
I've seen all three.
And I have
never seen any of them, but I was forced to see this one.
We forced by circumstances and by our friend Donnie Yen.
He's yes. just so wonderful.
He's dreamy.
He's so dreamy.
Donnie Yen, we mentioned...
I love Donnie Yen.
Yes, Miko and I like action movies, and we like sometimes right. what could be considered bad movies.
Eat
men. And Jen doesn't. So Jen was going, I don't want to go, and I'm saying there's Donnie Yen in it. There's Tony Jaa from Ong Bak is in it.
Yeah, Enter the Fist.
And also, I've enjoyed the last few Fast and Furious movies so much.
Is he in those?
No, he,
no. Oh, I got so excited.
But actually, Tony Jaa was.
Oh, yeah.
Tony Jaa was. But in Vin, I kind of trust now. I was mm-hmm. telling you, the name of his company is called One Race. Mm-hmm. And he has one race on screen. He has one race behind the camera. And it's also a clever title because he's famous for race movies.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then Jen was going to go to the library and let us watch it and then meet us afterwards. But mm-hmm. the library had weird hours. Mm-hmm. So she came in a huff.
Mm-hmm.
She was huffy.
I was.
And she sat down and she was going, so how do you feel about the movie now, Jen?
Oh, no. I really liked it.
Yes.
But in what way?
Like, it wasn't a good movie. It was batshit ridiculous.
Yes.
Exactly.
But I appreciated it and I needed it at this point because as dorky as it was and as corny as it was, like, the whole thing was just, like,
fun.
Like, it was, well, no, but even for me, I was like, this is so topical because, like, they kept being like, you know, it was like the government, like, they were working for the government and then they were trying to do the right thing, but then the government was bad, so then they turned on the government and blah, blah, blah. And it was like, oh, like, the whole thing was like, I'm not patriotic, like, I'm a rebel. I don't even fucking know what it was, but I was just like, yeah, we are. Like, dissent is patriotic. Like,
you cannot trust the government. You cannot trust anybody who's in to power. That's the message of the movie, but that's beside the point. It took me back to being a kid at a Saturday matinee. It was a little boy's fantasy. How did you feel about that?
It was
a little boy's fantasy.
Yeah, it was a little bit over the top at times. It wasn't even like, I don't mind that, like, the two main girls in the troupe were, like, total bombshells because, like, they fucking are. Like, Ruby Rose and that other woman, I don't remember her name, the Indian woman.
Indian actress. It'll be in the supplementals, guys.
But, like, there were a couple of gratuitous scenes in there that I was just like, what is the fucking point of this?
It's a teenager's dream.
I get that, but it he's also Vin Diesel's
teenage
also
boys,
a grown-ass
notebook.
Man. Yeah.
What happens when you find a teenage boy's notebook on the street? You take it and make it into a film.
Yeah, and also Ruby Rose gave the impression that she was bi, if not lesbian.
Well, she is, yes. I think, right? Yeah.
I think so.
In the film,
the character.
But again, One Race. We had all these different races. We had Chinese. We had Thai. Mm-hmm. We had Hispanic. We had African American. We had everything.
The Irish guy or
Irish
Scottish?
Guy,
I don't know.
Oh, he was slamming the stuff all over the thing. But the point is, if you've seen the last few Fast and Furious movies. This is basically a Fast and Furious movie.
I like this more than Fast and Furious, though, because they actually fought, and it was, like, it was over the top, but it wasn't like, oh, like, what are they going to do with the cars now? And then, like, the newest Fast and the Furious trailer has, like, the car, like, slamming into a tank or some shit, you know, where it's like, this was, like, over the top, but it was still, like, people punching people and just, like, blazing guns shootout.
Because, as I mentioned, Donnie Yen is a full, he has the second billing.
Surprised at that.
Yeah. And Tony Jaa has like fifth billing.
Yeah.
And he's hard, he's not in it a lot. He doesn't get to do a lot of his stuff. He gets to do a little bit.
He plays like the like Monkey King character.
Right.
Like he's very silly, but he'll fucking kick your ass.
Yeah.
Right.
He is like doing like flips off of cars and smiling. Yeah. And I'm like, what are you, okay.
He's awesome. But Donnie, I knew we were in for a good time because when Donnie is introduced, he's introduced in a spectacular fashion as the hero of the movie. And in fact, Jen was there going, oh, I don't want Vin
it
to
really
kill
sets
Donnie.
The tone.
I just, like, I said, after Rogue One, I was like, I'm not here to pay to see Donnie Yen get fucking killed again.
He didn't get fucking killed.
When someone runs on top of a building, jumps to the next building, break through 3 inches of glass, landed, row, and with no damage, you know what kind of movie you're watching.
My only problem with that scene, though, was he slid on that table for so long that I thought they were going to make a joke of it based on, because the first scene of the movie was really effective because it completely, like, I didn't know what I was going into, because, again, with Triple X movies, I just assumed they were these, like, again, like, these James Bond, on adrenaline, like,
that's
steroids.
That's exactly
like,
what it was.
Like, I thought it was, like, these knockoff, but then, like, the tone of the opening scene was so, like, bonkers, and I was like, oh, okay, like, is this a parody? But I know it's not a parody.
It is kind of a parody.
It is a parody.
It exists as a parody as well as a serious thing.
Yeah.
But basically, it's just let's have fun, but at the same time, it held together a lot better than anything else we've seen for this podcast.
Right.
And I was saying, this really sets the bar for James Bond, because this is 6 or 8 James Bond movies in one.
Yeah.
I mean, they just set the bar so high. And also, I was very gratified that a lot of it, most of it, was stunts.
Mm-hmm.
Not all of it. It was not all special
that
effects.
That was the thing, too. I was a little bit disappointed because when we first went in there, I was kind of like, oh, well, it'll be nice to see a movie that's probably mostly practical effects. And then fucking, like, the opening sequence, like, the first shot of the movie is, like, a satellite falling into Earth. And I was like, well, shit.
Yeah, but then it's followed by him skateboarding down a mountain, which was almost all practical effects.
Yeah. That was fun to watch. The action skin factor in the movie when a guy just used what do you call those skates?
Yes. I guess
skates down the mountains.
Yeah.
That was fascinating and
that was
wonderful
pretty cool.
Watch.
I wish there was more of that. I wish
I wish that too.
I was very okay with that being it because I was just like, what the
but
fuck
that,
am
that
I
was,
watching?
That's the whole kind of thing about Triple X.
I didn't know what I was watching, Miko. Okay. The only thing I remember, I told you in the car before we came to this movie, I was like, Miko, the only thing I remember when the second Triple X movie was coming out, I was working as a lifeguard. I distinctly remember being on the stand at the lifeguard stand, hearing a bunch of kids talk about this movie, and me being like, well, they're going to Google it, and they're going to discover porn.
Oh.
And that's what I remembered about this
Nothing
movie.
Nothing wrong with that.
Was just like, well, this is not a good movie title to Google.
But let me just also say that I knew we were in good hands, that one of the very first things Donnie did was the triple kick.
Yeah.
Yes.
Now, what the triple kick is, for those of you who haven't read my books or seen the documentary or anything like that, is that's something kung fu actors do to show you their skill. Because that's another great thing about this movie. You have Tony Jaa, you have Donnie Yen. They are not going to be doubled an enormous amount.
Mm-hmm.
They take pride in doing their own stunts
mm-hmm.
and doing them very well. Not like being an American actor was going, well, I do my own stunts. These guys train their whole lives
mm-hmm.
to do their own thing. So what happens is that when a kung fu star leaves the ground with his feet and kicks 3 times before his foot comes back to the ground, that's like an opera singer hitting the best high C ever in an aria. That is the sign of what they do. And he did it almost immediately, so fast and so effectively, that I literally sort of like, I don't know if you know, I reacted the opposite way I normally do to the movies we go see. Normally I sort of slump in my seat, and there I just sat right up. I just went, okay, Donnie's letting me know that, you know, yep, I'm starting there. And I said, all right, buddy,
mm-hmm.
now let's see if you can go higher, more.
For me, I was like, I don't know if I'll rewatch this movie, but I'm like, oh, I'll definitely be looking up like a compilation of all his fight scenes on YouTube and just watching that on loop.
There's plenty.
Because it's like, no, I mean, just for this, like, I want to see the fight. Like, the fight later on the airplane with him was just like.
The climactic fight.
So badass.
Yes, exactly. I mean, that's
like,
why I was thrilled.
And you know it's him, too, and you're like, fucking hell. And obviously, he's not punching these guys full. Well, maybe he is, I don't know. But it's
him.
No, he's not. But he knows how to do it. But the trick at the last fight, you know, he did the triple kick. But in that first fight, he's fairly serious because
mm-hmm.
he's trying to do it. The last fight, he's having fun.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's like he's smiling and he's doing the Popeye wind-up punch.
Yeah, that was so funny.
But again, he's doing it so fast, and there was some really sweet stuff in that. The whole ending, that really put, there's a fight scene like that in Die Another Day,
mm-hmm.
the James Bond movie, where they're in a crashing plane.
Mm-hmm.
The same kind of thing. And if you go watch that fight scene in Die Another Day and then watch it in Triple X, The Return of Xander Cage, it's like, oh yeah, they've really improved it in Triple X.
Uh-huh.
Mm.
And again, the other thing, so again, they had everybody, my only minor disappointment, because I had a whale of a good time,
mm-hmm.
is that they did what I ask you to do in a good action movie, which is they introduce individual characters with individual talents,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
they fight in their characters.
Yeah.
Yes.
But they didn't quite go as clever as I wanted them to. They got close.
Mm-hmm.
We had the two women who were the gun girls
mm-hmm.
Do a John Woo-ish
mm-hmm.
sequence near the
back
end.
Back to back.
I knew it.
Jen was going nuts
thrilled.
When they went back
well,
to back.
Well, because for me, it was like up until that point, the only time we saw a girl was like when she was in a bikini
right.
or like dancing at a club.
Right.
And I'm a little bit, because sometimes it's annoying when it's like you see like there's either like the super badass girl or like four girls that he just had sex with.
The Jade Voss. The Jade Voss girls who were just there for decoration.
And then it's like you had the Nina Dobrev who was Becky, who was like the like super stereotypically like nerdy, uncoordinated. But like she, you know, it was
corny.
They gave her like a little edge because they like tried to have her be like trying to like hit on Vin Diesel.
But then they did that True Lies thing, which I didn't like, which is when they had Jennifer Jason Leigh. You know who I'm talking in True Lies, the one who was in Halloween. Why am I blanking on her name? But anyway, they had in that she was stupid and didn't know how to use a gun and would scream all the time and drop it, and the gun would go off and kill other people. And that happened to Nina Dobrev.
Was a little bit annoying.
That was a little bit annoying. But she was adorable. Everybody was adorable. Everybody was very personable.
You felt like they had a lot of fun shooting this film, too. Like, it felt like a fun, like, set to be on.
But also, go ahead.
Oh, for me, this is one of the funniest films I have seen this year. Just because it's so damn fun. It's one of those movies where you see a character, for example, running towards a car, and you're like, he's gonna turn his back and drop into the car. I know it's coming. And he did it.
It does.
And he does it, and it makes me laugh.
So here's the difference.
It makes me really happy. Mm-hmm.
What would take these very good, very enjoyable fight scenes and make them great, classic fight scenes, is if not only we saw the girls shooting and saw their really awesome thing where they go back to back and all the rest of it, but their shooting means more than just shooting. In other words, they do something more than just shoot people. In other words, they see a person and they realize they're not going to be able to do a clear shot on them, so they do something clever with their gun. They do something clever with the bullet rather than they target them in such a way. This is what John Woo was able to do. He was able to link the fights to the emotions of the people and do the fight in such a way that you, I mean, I smiled throughout this, but always for me, the sign of a good action scene is when I go, ooh, ooh, you know, and I'm moving in the seat like, oh, dodging and oh, that's cool. Awesome. I didn't do any of that, which was, except for Donnie. Donnie and to as much as they let him, Tony, and as much as they let him, Vin Diesel. Vin Diesel did some sweet stuff. And as a matter of fact, we'll talk about the...
Donnie had destroyed some manhoods in the film.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Let me just leave it at that.
Yo, it's what, nice what, to go see, ahead. Like...
destroy some manhood in the film.
Yeah, so go into
right,
detail.
Right, no. He said in one of the scenes where he's kneeling down, with his hand tie, he basically told the guy, hey, your fly's down.
Oh, yeah.
Your mother tell you to zip up. And when the guy looked down, he turned his knee up and he kicked the guy so hard in the balls.
Yeah.
It was absolutely,
the one complaint I had about, like, the fights in this movie was it fell into, like, the stormtrooper thing where, like, all of the highly trained opponents all kept missing. Like, in the opening scene, as much as it was so cool to see Donnie Yen smash through a window and, like, destroy people on, like, a corporate office table, I was just like, you're wearing, like, a wife beater. I'm like, you should have been shot, like, 17 times, but, like, magically they all suck, but you're awesome, so you take them out at the first shot, but, like, they can't hit you.
But, again, I didn't feel that about that scene because I felt he knew where everybody was.
Yeah.
That was the other nice thing. There's something also that happened was in Vin Diesel 4, because remember what Ruby Rose, when she was assassinating people on Donnie's Island, he set them all up.
Mm-hmm.
He told her where they were.
Yeah, that was really
good. She was also hanging in a really cool way and then did an octopusy claw thing to come down off of the tree.
Oh, there's a girl who does that at our climbing gym. She rolls them like trapezes, whatever the hell. Like the ribbon. Cirque du Soleil type shit, man.
Yes. So if we see it again, if we get the DVD and just watch the fight scenes or go on YouTube and watch the fight scenes, I think you'll see that Donnie does that.
Mm-hmm.
That Donnie, you know, when people point a gun at him, he is already moving in such a way that they're not going to hit him, and he knows they're not going to hit
like
him.
That's like the stairwell scene was really funny with them, wasting his
scene.
Bullets.
That was...
Like, they knew the guy had five bullets left, and, like, they just kept sticking their hand out to draw the fire. Yeah. Like, that was really funny.
The movie is very clever, I think. Very enjoyable. If we thought it was going to be great, would we have enjoyed it as much? Because I think we looked at Rotten Tomatoes and it only has like 43.
But I feel like why would you think this was going to be a good movie? Like, this is literally like guns blazing. I mean, I had a very, like, I usually hate these movies.
Yeah.
These are fun movies. You don't go in these movies.
Okay, you watch Nick Cage movies on Netflix for fun. Like, shut the hell up.
Not Rick. Miko does that.
I do that.
But the point is, I think I was telling you, as a matter of fact, that I was expecting not to like this. I thought it was going to be all lighter-than-air stuff.
Oh, yeah. I was going to literally sit in a library for 2 hours while you guys did this.
Yeah. And now I'm glad you did, and I hope you're glad you did.
Yeah.
By the way, everybody, this thing was crammed with stunt people. This had an army of stunt people and also an army of fight coordinators and stunt coordinators.
Oh, I've never seen so many stunt people in a credit role.
But the thing that was surprising to me, usually when I go to IMDb and check out the stunt crew, there's one or two stunt coordinators, one or two fight coordinators, usually one, because that means they're credited. Here we had armies of guys. We had stunt coordinators for every different kind of sequence they had. We had sequences in the air. We had sequences on the water. We had sequences underwater. We had sequences in cars. We had sequences on the ground. And they had a stunt coordinator for every one of them. And let's see, Bob Brown, stunt coordinator who worked on Keanu, the Key and Peele movie, and I Am Number 4 and Pixels. Also, Leighton Morrison, who worked on Suicide Squad, Troy Robinson, Scott Rogers, John Valera was the fight coordinator for Live by Night, the new mobster movie. Meanwhile, Tim Connolly, Jason Gospe, Jeremy Marinas, who were all fight coordinators, and this is not even counting Donnie Yen and Tony Jaa, who obviously did some of their own choreography, if not all of it. Basically, you boys follow me.
I was going to say, I feel like how could any of those guys possibly tell them what to do? Like,
really?
I don't mean that in, like, even, like, an experience way, but I mean, like, in terms of, like, their fighting styles, and, like, how could somebody who doesn't, like, who can't do what they do even try to figure out, like, the flow of that?
Yeah, and also it's interesting, whenever Vin and Donnie had to face each other, they made it credible.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't, even though Donnie would have, you know, wiped the floor.
I kept thinking that. I was like, I want to see them fight for real because I want to see Donnie and kick his ass.
Well, Vin is making the movie. This was directed, by the way, by DJ Caruso, who was born and raised in Norwalk, Connecticut.
Whoa!
Yes. And he directed Disturbia and Eagle Eye.
Oh, that fucking movie scared me.
Yeah, Disturbia?
Yeah, with Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah. I thought it was actually scary. I thought he had a... It was pretty good.
Yeah, I liked it.
Of course, there was a lawsuit. I think the Hitchcock estate went after them for being too much like Rear Window.
Oh, Rear Window. Yeah.
And I think they won, but that still doesn't change that the movie was pretty good. So DJ Caruso, I'm going to look for. But basically, these are Vin Diesel movies. And even though there was a little controversy with The Rock on the last Fast and Furious, where The Rock sort of like called him out for being a little egocentric, this one I had a whale of a good time. And I thought it was one of my favorite action movies during the tenure of action film Autopsy.
Yeah.
Is there anything else we're missing? I mean, I enjoyed it so much.
I was going to say, I feel like weird saying this. I feel like my least favorite, not that my least favorite part of it, obviously it was like the ass and tits part, but like Vin Diesel for me was the least interesting character
in this movie.
More I'm thinking about it, when you're like, oh, Vin Diesel had an ego, and I was like, oh yeah, I didn't really like his character. Like, he was so like full of himself, and I get that's the character, and that's like, it's again, it's his movie, it's his company, but I was just like, everyone else, like, you wanted to know more about them, but with him, you're like, I know who you are.
But that's really important because Tom Cruise is known for being that way of what's his name? Oh, God, why am I? I'm blank. This always happens. I'm blanking. If you ever listen to any of my audio commentaries, you can just hear me blanking. There are several Will Smiths.
Okay.
Will Smith is known for being egocentric. But the difference is, the reason why Mission Impossible Rogue Nation is so much, the fifth Mission Impossible movie, so much better than the first, is that you see that Tom Cruise has learned to share.
Mm-hmm.
There was a great comedian, one of the great, the gods of comedy, named Jack Benny. And he was gigantically famous because, unlike people like Bob Hope, he gave all the good lines to the supporting crew.
Mm-hmm.
He said, if they're funny, I'll look good.
Mm-hmm.
So what's great about this movie is, yes, Vin Diesel has done movies where he didn't share with anybody, and those weren't good movies. Here, he made sure that all the other characters were super interesting. They were given their moments.
Yeah, yeah.
It wasn't 85 or even 60% him. It was 50% him, 50% Donnie.
Yeah, it was, 50% it was pretty well balanced.
Yeah, it was. That's the mark.
What the fuck is happening?
That's the mark of a
this
good...
This is not what I was expecting.
I'm embarrassed
a little bit.
Also, this movie has good plot twists.
Yeah.
If you...
No, it doesn't.
I wouldn't go that far.
Are you talking about Ice Cube? Like, shut the hell up.
No, I knew Ice Cube was coming.
I didn't know Ice Cube was coming, and I was thrilled when he did.
Ice Cube was coming. Well, I love that his entrance was perfect.
That was a little bit like...
When he said, like, down nine, I knew that was meant for Q, because he wasn't able to come to rescue them or help them, but there's someone else who didn't show up in the movie, and that person can only be the second Triple X, which is Ice Cube.
Yeah, just to, since, you know...
It was beautiful.
Wait, so was the second one only about Ice Cube?
Yes,
it was only Ice Cube.
I had no idea. Ice Cube starred in that. And I was never happy with that, because I never find Ice Cube credible.
Ice Cube's never a lead. He's always the cool surprise.
Right. I have to say, although for Triple X, the second one, I like Ice Cube's character.
Because
he's a badass. He's a snarky badass.
But I would have preferred LL Cool J to play him, because he's more physically credible.
Yeah.
He's more physically credible. But in this one, when they got to that scene...
But I feel like LL Cool J always plays the same character.
Yeah. But which is fine, because he's cool. He's Ice Cube. But be that as it may...
No, he's LL Cool J.
LL Cool J, you mean. No, I loved him. The shark movie. He was with Samuel L. Jackson getting eaten up...
Deep Blue Sea.
Yeah.
God bless it. I love that shitty piece of shit.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Oh, my God. I love Deep Blue Sea. You have no idea.
I remember in the scene, the secondary crew, Vin Diesel and Donnie Yen are on the plane, fighting in the plane. The crew is being attacked by everybody remaining in the government. Mm-hmm. And I literally remember sitting in the audience and going, oh, how are they going to get out of this one? There's no credible way they're going to get out of this one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then Ice Cube shows up as the character from a movie that came out a dozen years ago.
Yes.
And then when he blows it up, I just went, I had that moment in the theater going, awesome!
No, it was awesome. Rock, paper, scissors, rocket launcher.
That was fucking stupid.
That was, I know, but it was stupid, so good.
But it was Ice Cube.
I really,
when Vin Diesel threw that guy in the toilet, I really was like, don't say like a stupid one-liner afterwards.
He couldn't do it as well as Ice Cube.
Right.
Ice Cube executed like one-line zingers like that perfectly because his attitude.
Yeah, but the point is, Vin gave Ice Cube the moment. He gave him the moment, and Cube took it and ran with it to my delight.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, there's a big fight scene where, I mean, he sets it up that somebody's going to go down an airplane toilet, and sure enough, they do. And again, that's another thing I love about good action movies. It's, if you set something up, you are duty-bound to pay it off.
Duty bound.
Very well. Oh, that's good. Yeah. I did that on purpose, of course. I meant to say that.
Good setup, Rick.
Hitchcock's always said, if you create tension in the audience, you're duty bound.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's like, if you show a gun, you got to use it like 14
later. I have to say,
later.
With this film, it did.
Yeah,
it has a lot of setups, small setups in the beginning or even right before the action happens.
Right.
It has a lot of good setups so you weren't sort of like... The action weren't unexpected.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Same thing with the power glove. Everything was set up to a way that it was done.
Yeah.
That you know, when it shows up again, you know that it how it.
The
happened.
Only one that wasn't set up well was the younger Chinese kid. His little bio was just like good to have for like good for a fun time. Well, and I was just like, what qualifies you to be here?
Well, I'm going to find that out. That'll be in the supplemental.
Okay.
I'll research the guy and find out why he was in the film other than to get the movie.
Yeah,
because
like I get why the actor was there, but it was like everybody else was like former like U.S. soldier or whatever sniper, and he was like this young kid who like had a handgun and like.
But you know,
that
would have been funny, now that I think about it, now that you mention it. If they really had tagged it in, he's only there to play music during their fights.
Yeah.
That would have been a lot of fun.
Yeah.
That would have been
awesome. He would have gotten them going with
the music.
And
it's like the bad guys, even like they're going to attack him, and he's like, dude, I'm just here for like the vibe.
I'm just here for the music.
I'm just here for this.
Just here for the music.
So like, okay.
Well.
I think that would have been too meta.
It probably was, but even so, the fact that we're even thinking about it.
But the fact that they had intro cards, too, I was still like, with the karaoke song, I was like, the fuck is this? Like,
it was fun.
It was a fun movie.
It was self-aware.
It was a fun movie.
And again, whether or not we would have enjoyed it as much had we had been prepared for it being this much fun, I always find going to movies and not expecting much is always helpful.
Yeah, I never would have. Even if you both said it was good, I've been like, y'all are full of shit.
Well, now you will trust me more, Jen.
Now if they make another one and they bring back the same cast, I'm going to feel obligated to go, but then I'm going to inevitably be let down by like the lesser sequel.
Oh, stop that.
Yeah. I'm just preparing
myself. Don't worry,
myself.
I will prep you. I will prep you. We've got more stuff to go. Well, thank you, everybody. That was just an awesome podcast as ever. Hopefully it recorded. Your version might have lost something when somebody called you during the recording
right.
a couple of seconds.
Thanks, John.
Let me do mine. Let me do mine and see if mine is still recording. Okay, we're going to do that.
There it is.
But yeah, so yeah.
Yeah, not bad.
Yeah, okay. We're just a couple of seconds off in the different ones, but in any case.
Right.
So, thank you very much for listening. Come back in 2 weeks. Hope to hear you're here to hear what we're going to do next. And of course, do you want to do my sign-off altogether?
Yeah.
Okay, 1, 2, 3. Use your blinkers, jackass.
Oh, God damn it.
Try it again.
I thought it was use your goddamn blinkers.
No, use your blinkers, jackass.
You're nicer than me.
And there it goes. And this is post-car accident. 1, 2, 3. Use your blinkers, jackass.
Okay, break it up. Break it up. For now.
You don't give up, do you?
Listen in next time for more film fun, frenzy, and friends. Until then, check out actionfilmautopsy.com where the excitement never ends.
Sonic Victory.